Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Dentzowitz. Friday. I see out there that this was the week for a lot of spring breaks, not just locally here in the Pinellas County area. I think all the Pinellas County schools had this week off. The teachers who are on my trivia team had this week off. But I also see that there seem to be a lot more college-age people around the beach area here in Madeira Beach, up and down the coast. So I guess a lot of colleges had spring break this week as well. I guess that would be starting, March 11th and going to March 18th, something like that. So I've just kind of noticed that. In fact, yesterday, there is a, I don't want to call it a hotel, but kind of like a timeshare building that isn't too far away from me, probably about 500 feet, something like that. And it has a pool in the back. And I heard a DJ down there, music playing and everything else. Very unusual for Madeira Beach. Madeira Beach, very low-key. In fact, I have a story in this notebook from yesterday that I didn't get to about Madeira Beach and a local election that we had. Maybe I'll get to it before the end of the show. But this is an area that young people come to on spring break. Maybe not as popular as the Atlantic Coast, Fort Lauderdale, Daytona Beach, Miami, all of that area, Palm Beach. But on the Gulf Coast, get our share of teenagers and early 20-somethings that are out from college and they come down here and they hang out, and I have nothing in common with them whatsoever. In fact, I can tell you when I was in school back in college in the early 90s, which seems like yesterday, I never went anywhere for spring break, ever. What I remember about spring break was a week in which you still had schoolwork to do. But I was getting, I was big into drag racing at the time. Yeah, probably shocked about that. But I can remember working on my car during that week and getting it ready for when school was really out in May. So as soon as school was out, I'd be ready to get on the road because I would store my car during the winter. And I'd be ready to go out and drag race, cruise around for the summer. So that's what I would do during spring break. Although I don't think that our spring break was this early. It seems to me that Grove City's spring break was later in March. Maybe it varied from year to year. So, and now today, of course, it's St. Patrick's Day. What a way to end a spring break. You party all week, and then it's St. Patrick's Day on Friday. I mean, does it get any crazier than that? Probably doesn't. But as a guy who is 60-some percent Irish, and the rest pretty much English, pretty much British, I think that those two genealogies and ethnicities make up about 98% of who I am. I couldn't be farther away from being Irish or of Irish descent. Don't let the German last name fool you. Because I don't drink at all. I don't drink. There was a time, a long time ago, where I would have a beer once in a while. And I guess when I turned 21, wanted to experiment with all those mixed drinks and everything. Just never got into it at all. At all. Never been drunk. Never had a buzz. And maybe in that way, I do share something in common with Donald Trump. But so I'm an Irish person who doesn't drink. I'm not into big crowds. I'm not really into wearing green. And on top of that, I've never seen those leprechaun movies either. So St. Patrick's Day is just another day of the year to this Irish guy. The reason I'm Irish is because my biological family, as you may know or may not know, I'm adopted. My biological family's last name is Joyce, which, of course, doesn't get more Irish than that. But I have a German last name, Denzel. And my mother's last name, her maiden name, is Italian. So I got all sorts of things going on. I got all sorts of European stuff going on. German, Italian, British, Irish, just missing a little bit of that French infusion. I think I would have most of World War II covered. So there's that. So happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. Please do not drink and drive. Please don't do that. I know I think that getting drunk and everything is a little stupid anyway, just me personally. But I know people are going to do that. Don't drive. Call Uber. Call Lyft. Call a taxi. Get some friends. Sober friends. Drive you home, please. Let's get to the show. Donald Trump, I had this on yesterday's docket, but we didn't get to it. Yesterday, and if you hear a little sniffing, my allergies have come back. The wind has whipped up. It's gotten a little colder. My allergies are back. So if you hear sniffing, that's why. And I apologize. The microphone is just too good. What can I tell you? Donald Trump, it seems like a month ago now that he talked about how Barack Obama wiretapped or was surveilling or doing something Trump Tower in New York City. This goes back to those FISA requests that the Obama administration made in June or July of last year that were turned down. And then in October, one was granted. Not sure at this point all of what the Barack Obama administration could have done. I mean, Barack Obama was about 2 months from not being president anymore anyway. It's hard to say. And I'm guessing that do FISA requests like these extend to the next administration? That's a good question. They probably don't. I'm guessing that a new Justice Department comes in and could decide not to do that anymore, I'm guessing. But Donald Trump claimed that he had proof that Barack Obama and his administration had done this. He makes it sound, Donald Trump can say that, and it doesn't necessarily have to be illegal. I mean, this is not the first time we've talked about this on this show. He could have been doing that for very good reasons, the administration, the Barack Obama administration, his Justice Department, or they could have been doing it for very bad reasons, which would have been political reasons, as a way to get dirt on Donald Trump to help Hillary Clinton win the White House. It doesn't look like they got any dirt on Donald Trump because nothing has come out. And I remind you that Donald Trump won the election. It doesn't seem that Hillary Clinton used any kind of secret information against Donald Trump. In fact, I don't think that given the relationship between the Clintons and the Trumps for the last 25 years, would she really even need wiretapping or surveillance or anything to get information on him after she's been friends with him for 25 years, after her husband Bill and Donald have hung out for all those years? Surely Bill could pass along a couple stories, being that we know how Bill Clinton is. So I don't think this was done necessarily for political reasons at all. I'm inclined to believe that the FISA request that was granted in October was for genuine reasons, that the administration did have some concerns about Donald Trump, or at least his affiliates, his associates, his assistants, his helpers, his employees, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, the rest of them, and the relationships they had with Russia, what they had been saying about Russia, and then all of the hubbub about Russia stuff that was going on before the election. I'm inclined to believe that. So if Donald Trump thinks that his tower was tapped, and I know he's saying now, why put it in quotes? Well, you're the one who used the, don't use those words if you don't mean it. You know, that's the thing about Donald Trump. It's like if you take him seriously and you get him in trouble, he says he's just joking. And then if he does, you take him, as just joking, he says he's serious, all depending on what's convenient for him. I think now that, I don't think there is any proof. Now, he told Tucker Carlson at the beginning of the week, or the middle of the week, whenever this interview happened, that there is proof. Well, that's been a month ago, and he said the proof is coming. Really, do you believe that? I think that this is I think this is just hype. I'm not sure if he's ever going to release anything at all. I think in the end, I mean, how hard would it be to release it? If he had the proof, he's the president. All he has to do is tell those people, told them that, there you go, go do it. What is he waiting for, I guess, is the question. If it was so obvious that there's proof, and he knew somebody who had proof, or knew people who he had proof, it's now his Justice Department. It's now his FBI, his CIA, his NSA, all of them. Just tell them to release the information. I don't believe there is any. And if any surveying or surveilling that was being done, it sounds to me was done by the appropriate means. Once again, you can get, if you want to believe that Barack Obama's motivations were political, I can live with that. I don't know if there's a lot of proof of that, being that Trump won, Hillary lost. But you want to believe that, that's fine. And very well could be, I'm more inclined to believe that it was more along the lines of Russia. Now, what made Barack Obama, now, in all of this, Trump doesn't look that smart. And I don't think he is that smart guy, that smart a guy. But Barack Obama, he hasn't looked too good in all of this either. In that, after the election, when all of this really, really blew up, and the fake news, and it seems like just yesterday that was the big thing, the hashtag was fake news, Barack Obama was talking about Russia infiltrating this American election as if he's a bystander, as if he was an accountant in Chicago, Illinois. It wasn't in charge of the whole entire executive branch of the federal government. You know, he's complaining about it, he's worried about it, and everything else. Well, it's your job. I'm not saying you personally. I'm not saying that Barack Obama is a computer hacker or a computer expert or anything, but he's ultimately responsible for that. But then he's talking about it as if he has nothing to do with it, which was really kind of a theme, a major theme of Barack Obama's entire presidency. He talked about all of these problems in the United States as if he was totally powerless, whether it was ISIS or the economy or anything else. It was kind of weird. A total disconnect from what his job was and how he explained what he was doing while he was president. So that kind of has helped Donald Trump get away with him making all of these very bold claims about what Barack Obama and his administration, whether it was the NSA or whoever, the FBI, what they were doing. But I think eventually, I don't know if people are ever going to forget about this. I know the news cycle moves so fast. But I think at some point, there are going to be a lot of people who aren't going to forget him saying that Trump Tower was wiretapped or whatever it was done. And I continue to get more and more suspicious about this the longer and longer it goes that Donald Trump doesn't release that proof. Remember, and we have his people out there. Well, Donald Trump has other means of collecting information, and as if he has like secret guys in black suits and black hat and black sunglasses who are running around doing this stuff. I don't believe that at all. But this isn't the first time that this has popped up. There was another issue, and I forget about it. I forget what it was right at the second, but it was sometime not long before the election where Donald Trump had made some claim, and he was asked about it, and people within Barack Obama's administration said, we know nothing about it. Well, Donald Trump has his sources. Well, who are those sources? That's the way I feel now, that he was told that he was being surveilled, he was being followed, his communications were being wiretapped, and it sounds like, well, I have proof. I got a guy. Just like, you know, if your neighbor asks you, hey, do you know a plumber? you say, hey, I got a guy. This is what Donald Trump, I think, is trying to pull off in this. I got a guy who knows. I don't think he does. And with ever-increasing day, that with every day, and the distance we get away from that tweet, whenever it was, the more doubtful I get. And even so, I'm still not sure that if there was some sort of monitoring that was going on at Trump Tower or wherever else, any other Trump properties, everything, I'm still not sure that it was illegal. I'm still not sure about that. The reason I'm not sure, I don't think it's illegal, I'm not sure about that, is because a lot of people on the Republican side were worried about the romance that Donald Trump seems to have with Russia, with Vladimir Putin, with these guys, putting people who had Russian connections within his administration, within his campaign. He wasn't president yet. Now, what's bizarre about all this is now we have Nikki Haley up at the UN saying a lot of tough things about Russia. So it's hard to make sense of all of this. It really, really is. Just like it's hard to make sense of the Donald Trump budget and what his administration's attitude is toward immigration. There doesn't seem to be a lot of cohesiveness. It seems to just be a lot of stabbing in the dark. And I think that's what that tweet was. I think that it was, Donald Trump hasn't yet figured out that Barack Obama isn't the enemy anymore. He's not. And if he starts claiming that Barack Obama did this and Barack Obama did that, and I can't do this because of Barack Obama, it's no different than Barack Obama and his people talking about George W. Bush between 2009 and 2012. We know how well that worked for him. It got him reelected, but it hurt everybody else. It hurt everybody else. And that's why yesterday we was even talking about the midterms for 2018. We'll see. But I wonder if all of you are as suspicious as I am that there hasn't been any proof. Think about it in your daily life. If you think that your wife's cheating on you, and you hire a private investigator to follow her, and after about a month, he comes to you and says he has proof, and you say, well, can I see it? And he doesn't show it to you for a month, you'd get a little suspicious, wouldn't you? You'd get suspicious if you didn't see it within a few days. But here we are, at least 2 weeks or so, at least that, since this revelation about the wiretapping, the surveillance, the monitoring of Trump Tower, and Donald Trump has offered nothing. But he sure is talking about it. He says it's coming. Would you buy that if you had a private investigator going after your wife, following your wife around because you thought she was cheating on you? I know what I would think if I was married and I thought my wife was cheating on me and I've hired a private investigator and then he came back and he said that he had proof and didn't see or show it to me. I might think that private investigator maybe had been bought off by my wife. That's what I'd start thinking. But maybe I'm just a little paranoid. Let's move on to something else. I guess I need to talk about this real quick. I don't know what to make of it. I think this is all much ado about nothing. But there was a part of it that caught my eyes. Did you hear this story about allegedly Sean Hannity pulling a gun on Juan Williams? You know, as crazy as Sean Hannity has been the last year, it's almost kind of believable. I'm not saying he did. I'm not saying that Sean Hannity threatened Juan Williams. In fact, Juan Williams has come out and said that the story is absolutely not true. That Sean Hannity did not threaten him. They were talking about guns. Sean Hannity had his gun and was showing him, and that's all it was. Whereas over on CNN, I guess, they're saying that, and this was corroborated by a few different people, that Sean Hannity pulled out a gun and it had a laser sight on it, and he turned it on, and he pointed it at Juan Williams' head, and whatever. Actually, there's two things. Being that I am a gun owner, I talk about my gun once in a while on this, and I've been a gun owner, I've been a concealed carry permit holder for about a year now. Man, time flies. I can remember back to the time when I was thinking about getting a gun, and I was like, am I ever really going to get comfortable with carrying a gun on me? And, you know, I couldn't see that at the time, but I wanted to do it. I thought it was the right thing to do. And I got the Glock 19 at the end of, I'm going to guess, January, the beginning of February of 2016. Love that gun. And still I was like, am I really going to carry this everywhere? Am I really? And a year later, I can tell you, yes, you can be very comfortable. And it's just something like anything else, just like putting on a hat, putting on your shoes, same thing. But first of all, as a gun owner, I can tell you for sure that even if I am showing, I unload the magazine, I take the round out of the chamber, everything, you never point a gun at somebody. Even if you're just joking around, you don't do it. As Lenny McGill, the main Glock guy in the United States, he owns the Glock store out in California, he talks about when you clean your gun, you keep all ammunition away when you're taking apart your gun and cleaning it, because it's funny how sometimes rounds just happen to get into the gun. You just don't know how it happened, because while we're doing this, we're working with a fine piece of machinery and we just maybe forget what we're doing. And so you keep ammunition totally away when you're cleaning again. You put it in another room. You don't even mess with it. Totally far away. And along those lines is that that's one of the reasons you never point a gun at somebody. When you have a gun, if you're showing it to somebody, you cock it back, the slide back, lock it in position, you show it to the person, make sure it's empty, and it doesn't sound like Sean Hannity did that in this case. And to me, that sounds like he's not a very good gun owner. Seems like he's a little too loose. On top of that, where did this happen? Did this happen in the Fox studios? He's bringing his gun into the studio. I can see if he has it in his car. But I'm sure at Fox, they have secured parking and they have security guards and all of that, I'm sure. I can see if he's out and about. Sean Hannity probably even has a bodyguard or something like that. He wants to own 5 guns, 10 guns, 100 guns. I'm perfectly fine with Sean Hannity doing that. Bringing one into the Fox studios sounds a little strange to me. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's accepted behavior. The other part of it, it doesn't sound to me like he is a very conscientious, mature gun owner. Because I can never see me showing my Glock 19 to any of my friends like it sounds like he was innocently showing his gun, whatever it was, to Juan Williams. That's the first part of it that concerns me. And I don't think that that's been talked about enough. It's been all the hype and the over-sensationalism, the sensationalism period that has gotten a hold of the story. The other part of it is, knowing Juan Williams like I do, why would Sean Hannity be showing him a gun anyway? Juan Williams is a liberal, right? I know he doesn't necessarily all the time march lockstep with the rest of liberals. I think that when you see him on Fox News, he's for the most part being decently genuine, although I know a lot of those shows are scripted and people are told to take up positions because we need disagreement here and we need conversation and all of that. You'll never realize how much of that goes on. But I think he is a liberal. And so Sean Hannity showing him a gun, I was like, wait a minute, Juan Williams would actually care about seeing Sean Hannity's gun, whether it was a new one, an old one, whatever it was. I have a hard time imagining that. As a guy, I have liberal friends. The only people that I would think about showing my Glock 19 to are other people who are gun enthusiasts, people who ask to see it. I don't volunteer to show people my gun. That's not the right thing to do, I think, as a gun owner. they may, if my friends know that I have a gun, hey, you got your Glock 19, what's it like? Oh, it's pretty nice. Well, can I see it? Sure, let's take it out. Take out the magazine, take out the round in the chamber, because I do carry it loaded with a round in the chamber. You can do that with Glocks. And then you show, you cock the slide back, you hand it, you present it to the person. You keep the ammunition far away. And that's how you show somebody. But usually it's somebody asking me, not me volunteering. And I just have a hard time. And I can never see any of my liberal friends, if they know that I have a gun, asking to see it. Like, that just never even would occur to me. So finding out that Juan Williams, that Sean Hannity was showing Juan Williams his gun, it's hard. Even though I think this was innocent, on the other hand, it's even hard to understand the innocent story because of the way that I think that I know Juan Williams. I'm not sure how every day in the United States how many conservatives and conservative gun owners are showing their guns innocently as like to admire it to liberals. This isn't like a car. You know, you go to work, you just got a car the night before, you pull it into work, and, you know, tell people, I got my new car last night. Anybody want to take a look at it? At lunch, everybody goes out, takes a look at it. Oh, yeah, you know, it's not a car. It's a gun. Cars are not necessarily divisive unless you're really, 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 really whacked, you know, liberal. Really, really, really whacked environmental kook liberal. But guns, United States, they tend to be a little more divisive of a topic. So that's what hit me as I read this story. And it's just funny that I haven't seen any comments, even looking at the comments under these stories that have been written about this exchange and what really happened, whether it's at CNN or at Red State or Hot Air or wherever else. In the comments section, you don't see anybody. I just can't imagine Juan Williams really wanting to see a gun in the first place. So I continue to think, well, what really was going on? Do I think that Sean Hannity threatened Juan Williams with his gun? No. Do I think that Juan Williams asked to see Sean Hannity's gun? I don't see that either. So how did that all come about? I wonder. I guess only a fly on the wall would know. I know that Juan Williams has said in no time did he feel he was in any, there was no safety issues here or anything. But in his statement, he didn't exactly say that he asked to see Sean Hannity's gun either. In fact, that would be a way to defuse the entire thing if in his statement Juan Williams said, you know what, I was the one, Sean had mentioned that he had gotten a new gun, I wanted to take a look at it, I asked him to see it, he brought it to me, he unloaded it, and it was very, just two friends back and forth talking about his new gun. That's all it was. That's not what Juan Williams said. So it seems that Sean Hannity, I guess, just voluntarily showed Juan Williams his gun, which to me is weird. It's just weird. I don't think as gun owners, that's really what we do, especially if the person that we're going to be showing the gun to is probably a person who doesn't like guns. Now, I've had talks with liberals about guns. In fact, in my other show, Unfound, I have a couple women who I've interviewed who have at one time or another, being then in the work they do, may have to worry about their safety at least a little bit. They write things about criminals and things. And I know they're liberal, but I think it's my duty as a concerned friend, a concerned citizen, to say, well, you know what? You may want to think about getting a gun. And I'll tell them, I'm a gun owner. I take my gun with me everywhere. Even though I know they're liberal and all the things, I think it's my responsibility to say, well, maybe you want to go get yourself a firearm. Maybe you want to go take a couple classes just to be safe, because they're the ones who said that they were worried about, you know, being out in public and some of the things that they've covered, some of the things they've written about men mainly who are nasty people. So I will do that. But I would never, if I meet one of these people, these women in person, you know, bring my gun along and say, here's what I'm talking about. See this gun? See my Glock? That seems like way over the top. Seems like way over the top. So maybe it's just me. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. You know, right now is probably the best time to talk about this local Madeira Beach issue. Excuse me. Madeira Beach is this little community where I live on the Gulf Coast of Florida. It is west of Tampa. Yes, you can be west of Tampa and still be on land. Where I live is essentially an island. It's a barrier island protecting the coast, and there are multiple bridges that connect the mainland of Florida with where I live. You can look about on a map. It's like 4,000 people, which is about the size of the town that I grew up in, Leechburg, Pennsylvania. And there has been some building going on out here on the coast, up and down. This area continues to be a place where people want to come for the winter. They come for vacations. And the whole way up to Clearwater Beach and then the whole way south to St. Pete Beach, there is construction going on, trying to accommodate people once again who want to come here. And Madeira Beach, I'll just be honest with you, although Madeira, people maybe think of the word Madeira, they think of that island that's, I guess, an exotic island, or what is it, over near Europe or wherever it is. Actually, Madeira Beach, even though it is on the coast and it's a beach community and there's beachfront property and everything, it's a very, for the most part, very middle-class area. You do have families and people live there, but it's pretty middle class. I think that if you were to take it in Madeira Beach and put it somewhere in the center of Florida or any other state, it would just be once again, a middle class community. There aren't mansions or anything in this area. Although, if you go particularly north of here, very quickly in the next town up, what is that, North Reddington Beach or Indian Rocks Beach, whatever it is, you do run into some places, some huge places on the beach. I think some of them are owned by professional athletes, maybe even with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm not sure. Maybe other famous people may own some of these places. But in Madeira Beach, you don't have anything like that. Nothing. And then as you go farther south, Treasure Island, yes, that's what it's called, and then St. Pete Beach, it's a little bit more commercialized than what you'll find in Madeira Beach. Well, there have been developers that have been trying to come into Madeira Beach, I'm going to guess for a while, about building some bigger places, some timeshares, and trying to, because why? Because the land compared to north and south of us, here in this area, it's fairly cheap. It's fairly cheap because of that. And, but the land prices are going up. Well, these developers are coming in, and this goes back, this is an example, the reason I'm even talking about this is because this is what I talk about when I talk, what I mean when I talk about people want progress, people want jobs, people want this, people want that, but they don't want it next to them. So a lot of the Madeira Beach people have been trying to fight this, and they had a local election just a few days ago, I think, a few days ago. And I didn't vote. I'll be honest. I didn't go and vote. But they threw out the mayor. They threw out a couple other people. And they voted for at least three people to the commission or whoever it was, the mayor and a couple commissioners who are people who want Madeira Beach to stay the way that it is. It's very down home, very, once again, middle class type of area. And in general, I guess I have nothing wrong with that. But I also know the only reason that people can live here in Madeira Beach is because of tourism. You can see there's bars, there's restaurants, and we do have a couple bigger condos, some condo high-rise casinos, I'm going to say they're maybe 8 or 9, 10 stories tall. But compared to some of these other areas, it's not as many, especially if you go up the whole way up to Clearwater Beach. And I went back and looked, and it's obvious to me what has happened here. That you go back and look at the population of Madeira Beach, and what happened is it was this very nothing community back in the 1950s, but they started putting land in. I mean, a lot of the land that people are living on wasn't there. It was dredged up and turned into land that you could put houses on. This is nothing but a sandbar. But if you go back and you research it, you'll find out. So what these people did is they came here. It was perfectly fine for them to move here. Perfectly fine to have them take advantage of the area, the scenery, the water. Perfectly willing to take advantage of a bunch of companies that came in here and dredged up this land and made it so all of these houses could be built. Because I think if you go back to the Madeira Beach in the 1950s, I think the population was like 500 or something. like nothing. And then all these years later, it's like 4,000 something. You wonder how that happened. And it was because they added on all this land so people could live here. So now those people who moved here, lived here, they don't want anybody else coming in. And that kind of thinking drives me nuts. That they were the ones who lived here. They knew that they were the ones who were moving to this area. They had to know that people go to the beach during the summer and they want to stay here. They need hotels and everything, places to stay. But now they want to keep those people, I guess, from coming here and spending their money and everything else. It's just a little hard for me to understand. And I think it doesn't help that the bunch of people who are doing this are older people. I'm not sure younger people give a dang about this. And we do have younger people who live in this area who have families. And I see kids, you know, walking around the neighborhood. We do have people of that age who have kids that are like 10, 12. So they're in their 30s or into their 40s like I am. And so we have those people. I'm not so sure that those people care. Who I think care are these people who have been here for a long time. And they don't realize that by more hotels and things coming in, actually their property values go up. The value of their homes and everything they own and most of their wealth for anybody is tied up in their house. It could easily be that a house that's $250,000 now in Madeira Beach could go up to $500,000. $600,000 very quickly, and that helps everybody. And that's not artificial. This isn't like some housing bubble from the mid-2000s. This is genuine demand for land going up. People can't see that, though. You know, they want to keep it this little town, little community where, frankly, a lot of the houses in this area are shacks. I don't know if this area is really that well maintained. I sit here right on 140th Avenue, the busiest street other than Gulf Boulevard that goes entirely up and down this whole beach from Clearwater Beach the whole way down to St. Pete Beach. But the busiest other street in Madeira Beach is the one that I live on. I can look out there and see the cars whizzing by right now. You go back in there, and there's some nice places and everything, but there's a lot of not-so-nice places, too. And, you know, this strikes me very much the same as my hometown, coincidentally, of Leechburg, Pennsylvania, that has seen better times, that a lot of people have moved away. And other towns where they want to keep that... They want industry and everything. They want jobs to come to that area. But on the other hand, they want to keep that small town feel, F-E-E-L. And you can't have it both ways. You can't do that. And that is something, this continues to be, I think, something where older people in the United States continue to inflict their power on younger people in the United States. I think that's what's going on. I think young people, 30s and their 40s, I don't think they really give a dang. I don't think they give a dang in Leechburg, Pennsylvania. I don't think they give a dang in Midyear Beach. I don't think they give a dang in any small town across the United States that they just happen to live in. If some company or something wants to build a factory on the edge of town, they're all for it. It's the old people who start worrying about the congestion and this and that, and we're going to have more kids running around because families are moving here. It's going to be loud. And you know, they say they want progress, but they want progress like 3 hours away. They want people to live in their town, but they want those people to drive 3 hours to go to work. That kind of stuff drives me nuts. And if you really want to get into why a lot of small towns are dying across the United States, it's that. The old people are still there. They still think it's the 1950s. And they want to kind of keep it that way. But they want it to come back to the point where they want that same steel mill and everything. That's just not the way things work anymore. It's just not. And that attitude has to change. And so what's going to continue to happen, at least here on the Gulf Coast, is that the property values in Indian Rocks Beach and Bel Air Beach and Reddington Shores and North Reddington and all these areas, Treasure Island, their housing values will continue to go up because development is being allowed to be done there. And in Madeira Beach, it'll stay like here like it's 1980 all over again. And they're, these people are leaving a lot of wealth out there that they're never going to see. You know, and these are people probably who could afford to have a couple more dollars in their, they, you know, if their value of their house went up, they could, even though it would be tied up in their house, they could take out a second mortgage or take out a loan against their house and everything and probably live pretty well for the rest of their lives because their value of their home would be a lot higher. They're not going to be able to do that. People who fight against progress, fight against business and people coming in, I'll never understand them. You know, I like, you know, I would admit, Madeira Beach, probably a little too slow for me. It's not a bad living here or anything, but it's, you know, they don't have those problems in Las Vegas. You know, every person wants a casino right down the street because they know that those are good jobs. They're good paying jobs. It's a good time. Casinos take care of their properties. They have security. They manicure. They cut the grass. Everything else. Everybody's housing values go up when a casino is built right down the street. They have a totally different attitude about that stuff in Las Vegas. But let's move on to something else. Glenn Beck, who, you know, I'm not a big fan of him, but I will say that over the like the last year and a half since Donald Trump decided to run for president, he and I have been more in line with each other, probably more than I'd like. But he had a speech somewhere. He was talking about how he realizes that he has lost listeners since ever since he came out against Donald Trump, however long it was ago, two years ago, year and a half ago. Instead of going along with other well-known conservative personalities like Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, who have totally bought into the entire Donald Trump roadshow. And I've talked about this before. There was the guy Charlie Sykes who wrote a column beginning of the year, who said that he was getting off the air because of, you know, he wasn't national, but he was just in Wisconsin, well-known conservative talk show host in Wisconsin. He doesn't do a show anymore because he lost so many listeners because of coming out against Trump. I want you to know that I believe that's true. The funny thing is that as far as the statistics for this particular program, what I can see from my Podomatic downloads and listens, I don't know what the Red State Talk Radio stats are. I have no idea. They never tell me. Maybe they tell some of the other hosts. I have no idea. But I know that my statistics actually for this show have gone up. It seems like I have more listeners, more downloads, more plays since Donald Trump became president. And I'm going to say this started right around the election, which you would think would be the opposite, because usually interest in political shows diminishes a little bit after election, whereas mine have actually gone up. Who knows why? I don't think I'm really doing anything different, but I'm just telling you what's gone on. But I think that Glenn Beck overall is right. And he talks about how he's, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong. And that's how he runs his show. Now, you know that I think that Glenn Beck is a little bit of a kook. And I've thought that going way back to when he had his show on Fox News. I mean, the melodrama and the crying and everything else. The only thing he ever did good on that show was that he made the book The Road to Serfdom popular again because he covered it on an episode once. Was it that or Atlas Shrugged? I think it was The Road to Serfdom, I think. But you can't run your show. See, what has happened is that with what I think has gone on in conservative media the last 2 years, I guess, is that the show, the hosts have turned control of their shows over to the listeners. And I respect all of you. I like all of you. I appreciate you listening and downloading and everything else. But I also know that there's a reason, I hope I'm not going to sound too arrogant about this, there's a reason that I'm on this side of the microphone and all of you are on the other side. Not that I necessarily know more. I've chosen to do something. You've chosen to listen. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is a market-driven supply and demand pursuit. If nobody listens, then it's not worth doing this. All right? So if there's no listeners, there's no reason to turn on this microphone every day. But I also know that if all of you were to suddenly decide that you're all liberals and start emailing me and tweeting me and telling me you need to start doing a little liberal program, I would then say I'm not going to do that. So in that way, you have a little bit control of the program. But you surely don't have ultimate control of the program. And what it seems to me is that all of those hosts who have changed their positions to accommodate Donald Trump, they've done so because they've been blackmailed by their listeners. They've decided it's going to be the listeners who ultimately not just determine the news stories that are talked about, but how they're talked about. And that's something I'm not willing to do. I am not going to be blackmailed by my listeners. I'm just telling you. If you like what you're hearing here, then you're not part of this. But this is it's a very touchy subject. It's no different than when we talk about politicians. They get voted in. We are supposed to be their leaders, but we elect them to represent us. And as a politician, are you supposed to do what your voters want, or are you supposed to do what you think is best given what you know about the topic? It's a very fine line to walk. And it's a very fine line doing a show like this to figure that out. I don't particularly believe when it comes to politicians that they're supposed to vote the way all of their constituents want. I've never thought that. That's populism. And their constituents can be wrong. It's your job as a representative to go talk to your constituents and tell them, this is why I'm doing this. Maybe you'll see it my way. And try to convince them, here's the information. This is why I think this way about that. This is the same way that I run this show. But I think that what has happened is this is the reason that Sean Hannity and the rest of them, their shows have become popular shows because they're only going to say what their listeners like. That's not why I started doing this all these years ago. I did not get on here to say what I think people are going to like. I come to the microphone because I say what I like. And you're just going to happen to agree with me sometimes, and you're not going to agree with me sometimes. But it seems for too many of these people, that's become too big of a risk to take. Mm-hmm. It's too big of a risk. Because if it gets to the point where Rush Limbaugh is coming to the microphone and is only going to say what his listeners like, then he might as well just give them the microphone. He might as well just become the listener and let them. If they know more than he does, and he's because that's essentially what you're saying when you listen to somebody and you change what you think, you're actually saying, well, they know more than I do. Then they should be the ones behind the microphone, not Rush, not Sean, not Laura, not any of these people. None of them. I mean, for so many years, a lot of us conservatives who now feel jilted now, we thought that all those people were coming to the microphone with established set of principles that they weren't going to waver from. Here it turns out that's not true. Turns out that for the most part, they were saying all those things because that was what their audience wanted to hear. And it just happened to be that it was conservative. Not anymore. We know now that it's changed. And this is one more reason why. And so I think what Glenn Beck is saying is that he is willing to lose listeners if that's what's happening. Because he's willing to continue to do what he does. I've told you, I don't know how anybody listens to Glenn Beck. I just think that although he gets most topics right, his delivery, his persona, his personality, the way he does his show to me is, and the way he is just hard to take. The times that I've happened to run across what he's doing. But people like him. People think what he's saying is right. They can put up with the delivery and his shtick. There's no accounting for taste, as the saying goes. So it's a very interesting topic that Glenn Beck brings up there in kind of a different way for a guy who's internationally known, has a national audience in the United States, and it's essentially telling them, if you want to leave the show because you think I'm being too hard on Donald Trump, then you're just going to have to leave. I'm sorry that you have to feel like you have to do that, but I'm not changing. And that takes courage. And that's more courage that Glenn Beck is showing than Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and the rest of them have shown over the last year and a half. And it obviously was not something that they did to just help Donald Trump win the presidency because they wanted Hillary to lose. We now know that Donald Trump is president, that they're going to run interference for him on anything, even if it's not conservative, which is something that I predicted. I predicted they'd do that. And it's just a dang shame. Dang shame. One more thing, real quick. Mark, I come to most of the time I come to this microphone with my own ideas, and it seems that somebody out there who you probably know, who's much more well known than I am, is thinking the same way, and that's Mark Levin. All these conservatives getting excited about all these cuts in this budget that Trump's administration has released, and Mark Levin, I guess on a show, the only reason I found out it was like a link, I don't listen to the show, but he talks about exactly what I'm talking about. This budget does nothing about the debt, the deficits, the long-term unfunded liabilities, and everything else. And this is just how dumbed down, I think, conservatives have come. They get all excited over some departments being cut. The big problem is the total dollar number of the budget. That's the real problem. But I gotta go. You can find the show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern on the Prime Channel on RedStateTalkRadio.com. You can find it in Podomatic, at Podomatic and iTunes. And you can email me, Edward Denzel, at Reagan.com. My other show, Unfound, new episode today. Hope you all have a beautiful weekend. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.